Welcome to the Resilient Campus Podcast, amplifying the voices of college inclusion innovators. I'm your host, Sabby Labor, founder and CEO of Resilient Campus. Join me each week as I interview professionals on the front lines of campus and community movement building. For more information, please visit resilientcampus.com/podcast. Well, hello and welcome back to another amazing interview with a phenomenal human being and educator, Humberto Reyes. I'm excited for this to be the 24th episode. I cannot believe that we're here and you all have been asking for more episodes. I'm really excited because this week I actually get to record an interview with my good friend, Drea Elzy, who I went to grad school with. So I'm really excited. We just have a good time whenever we hang out. So I just hope that we don't laugh throughout the whole episode and have inside jokes, because we'll try not to do that, okay? So in this episode with Humberto Reyes, I'm really excited because this is the very, very first K-12 educator on the podcast. Are you cheering right now? You should be cheering, okay? I don't hear you. Okay, now I hear you. All right, good job. So I'm really excited because Humberto reached out to me because he is a podcast listener. And he really opened my eyes to the fact that P-12 or K-12 educators are listening to the podcast as well. And although this shouldn't be as eye-opening as it was, right? Because it makes sense. There's a lot of similar issues that we're dealing with in higher education environments that K-12 educators are also thinking about. And I think especially in California right now, with all the conversations and the policy pieces around ethnic studies and how ethnic studies in the K-12 environment across the nation is a topic of conversation and contention in some places, that I really appreciate his perspective in trying to push ethnic studies philosophies and frames and social revisionist histories into K-12 environments, and particularly with the communities that he's serving. I think it is really essential that this is a core element of his curriculum. And he talks about that. He talks about his role as an educator. And I think there's so much in here in terms of even if we take it out kind of at the 30,000 foot view, right? Getting very kind of meta for a second with you, thinking about the philosophies that guide our work. What drives us to be educators? What keeps us going, even though the work is set up for us? It's hard, it's rigorous. At times it feels unrewarding. He really dives in and I think reveals a very vulnerable side of as an educator and just kind of tells us the real story. So I really, really love talking with Humberto. And one thing that I think you'll find funny and kind of knowing me, Humberto and I had a phone conversation a few weeks ago, and it was when we were first getting to know each other, like, hey, you listen to the podcast, that's cool. How would you feel about being on the podcast? And at first he was like, you know, I'm not sure I'm the right person. And we talked for like 2 hours, and I said, you know, Humberto, if you say no, I'll understand. Like, if you don't want to be a guest on the podcast, but I think that the folks listening to the podcast would love to hear from you, would love a perspective from all the different angles and all the different ways that you're trying to serve communities. I think that they will really relish every word that you have to share. So I'm interested in your perspective. Given that this is our first K-12 educator, would you like to hear from more K-12 educators? Because that is a direction that I would love to have some folks on the episodes of the podcast as well. So let me give you a few highlights before I get out of your way and let you listen to the episode. So as our first K-12 educator, Humberto talks about bringing all these themes of developing culturally relevant learning experiences and making sure that what he's teaching students relates to their identities and their experiences and really their cultural capital as he's thinking about it, although I don't know that he ever used those words explicitly. He also talks about habits, and he's really committed to his growth and professional development, and he actively seeks out opportunities to do so. So I think that you will be able to pick up little tips and nuggets about how to do that in your own region or in your own discipline or in your own kind of functional area, however you want to view that. He also believes that we must come to this work with a fresh spirit and an open mind. And I really love that he says this, because then he draws connections to his first gen identity and how that influences his role as an educator and how he actually seeks out resources. Knowing that a lot of you listening in are first gen in your family to go to college, I think that you will really get a lot from that. He talks about his struggles and some of the strategies that he uses to find like-minded community. And he elaborates on that. And I think that that's something that I've heard from folks that they really want really strategy and resources around. And then we conclude our interview with some amazing core readings and some resources that I think you will enjoy if you're not engaged with them already. And then Umberto shares his contact information, and then he has a call to action for you. He has a request for help if you have resources for him, information, or kind of, you know, just like a next step of guidance and insight. He asked for your help in that realm. So if that's something that you want to offer and connect with Umberto, I encourage you to do so. That is what this podcast is about. It's to help you truly realize that you are not alone in this work, and that we can't do this work alone, and we shouldn't do this work alone. And that each of these interviewees are other people to add to your network, and they're craving community as well. And so really take them up on it. If they say connect with me, go connect with them. So that's all I have for you for now. I wish you an amazing week, and thank you so much for continuing to listen. And I will get out of your way so you can do so. This is episode number 24 of the Resilient Campus Podcast. Today we're speaking with Umberto Reyes. Umberto Reyes is a social studies teacher out of Southern California. He is currently interested in teaching and research in ethnic studies and teaching history through a social justice revisionist lens. Thank you so much for being with us, Umberto. I'm glad we finally arrived here to be together on this interview for the podcast. So thank you for your time and energy. How are you?
Glad to be here. Glad to be a part of this. In many ways, this is new for me, which makes it that much more exciting.
I'm really excited to have you. What do you want people to know about you? Like, what are you thinking about today that people listening in might be like, oh, that's really interesting. Cool. I can resonate with that.
So I'm going into being a third year teacher. So as a very new teacher to education, a big part of, you know, my career is trying to be the best teacher possible. And the questions that always come up are, how do I do that? And how do I bring my authentic self? How do I deal with, you know, educational politics in different cultures to kind of still bring, you know, what I feel is my voice, my developing voice. So I guess, you know, to anybody listening, it's more along the lines of like, I'm somebody who's very much learning what education is, what my role is in it. And as a teacher, it's like, how can I bring inspiration to my students in a way that, you know, isn't binding, in a way that isn't repressive, in a way in which the content I teach, you know, allows for creativity. You know, so I'm very much a romantic and an idealist, you know, as a teacher. And it still hasn't gone away for me. I know usually they say that wears off at one point, but it's still for some, I'm still very much a student of what I'm doing. And that's what drives me. It's like, you know, what does education really mean? You know, what does it mean to be educated? You know, what does this transfer of knowledge really mean? And what's the point, you know, if the kids, you know, are miserable, or if, you know, what I'm doing is boring. So it's like, how do I make them excited? In my profession, you know, it's not even so much history. It's more like, how do I just get kids curious to want to search within themselves, some greater truth? And so I have to ask myself, you know, is that too much to ask for a student? Are they ready for this? You know, and so finding where they are, you know, is always the goal too. And one thing I've learned lately is also learning to step aside because it's for them. So how do I not make this all about me too? You know, but it's like, yeah, I have my goals, but at the same time, it's like, this is for them. So how do I create that motivation for them as well? Education is one of those careers that there's a lot to learn on a moment to moment basis, especially in the classroom. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that I'm always itching to do more and to experiment. And I think it just comes from maybe movies I've watched, but also from teachers I've had that really, left me feeling good after their classes. And it's like, how do I also come in with that same sentiment, that same feeling? And how do I, you know, let kids come back with that same sentiment? Like, you know what, like this whole education thing, like this is something that it isn't and shouldn't be looked at as work. but rather like this is actually creating and stirring something in me, you know, because I think that's what, you know, people in academic professions, like we do this because like this moves us, it stimulates us, you know. Yeah, it could be work, but it's almost like the rewards are so gratifying, to open up a fresh book and to turn new pages, you know, like that's like a good feeling, you know. And it's like, you know, I want to share that with students, especially with students who have nobody in their family or in their background to look up to who has even these inclinations, you know. They might just, their families might just want to work, and that's just what life is, very practical, very good to work and work your 40, 50 hours. And then, you know, that's life and build a family, but it's like, there's got to be more, and you're allowed to dream for more, you know, at least that's what I tell myself. I don't want to settle in the grind, you know, and work for, and feel like I'm working for the man, you know. I want to have some ability to kind of do things as I want, you know, and that's kind of my rebel spirit too.
Thanks for sharing that. And what's really kind of magical about Umberto being on the podcast is that Umberto is the first K-12 educator that we've had on the podcast. And the way that we came into contact with one another is that Umberto emailed me about, you know, you're a podcast listener and you listen to some episodes, and then emailed me. And it really shed light on the fact that there are people that don't necessarily work within the higher education environments that are listening to the podcast and resonating with the stories and the guidance and the lessons that folks on the podcast are sharing. So, and even as we talked before and as we're talking now, you know, meeting students where they are and trying to build relevant curriculum and trying to acknowledge how much of us we put into the learning experience and how much it's not about us, but we influence it, and that kind of constant dance that happens is a lot of things that resonate, I think, when I talk with folks that are in the higher education environments. And so I really can appreciate the nuances of, you know, the guidelines and the different sort of parameters that are around the development of students that are in high school, middle school, for example, versus those that are in college. So I think it's kind of cool to hear you talk about working as, you know, a middle school teacher, high school teacher, and these different environments and the similarities, to be quite honest with you.
Listen, after listening to your podcast, I was like, oh, wow, like, you know, this is great because, you know, in higher ed, they're asking the same questions and they're also trying to, you know, build on research and transfer that research into really coming in, outreaching into and reaching communities, you know. And by hearing what I consider the academics, intellectuals, people in higher ed, it's like, what the work you guys are doing is directly influencing us because it's your research that we read, you know, in college classrooms and in textbooks. And that's what's pushing, you know, education forward or any other topic that's out to create, you know, resilience, you know, in the world. And so my biggest thing was, you know, for one, it's like, I'm here with an open ear, and you know, you've had some great guests, and I'm like, oh wow, like they've had some struggles, and they're still trying to figure it out. And sometimes we feel, well, at least maybe not so much anymore because I'm a little older, but I think for a long time you feel like, you know, higher ed in many ways has it figured out. But then you forget that, you know what, like this is all very much we're all very much in darkness a lot of the times, and just really trying to figure out what's best for our classrooms, you know, for ourselves, for our careers, and it's an ongoing process. But to hear it from the higher ed, you know, it definitely, it's humbling. It's like, oh, wow, like, you know, they're in the same struggle, you know, and that's cool because sometimes you feel that you should have it all figured out, and the pressure and expectations are there for teachers. It's like, wait a minute, like, you know, this research is constantly developing, you know, especially social justice work. This is a newer way of looking at education. Like, it's not, you know, it's you know, it's a product of, I'd say probably the civil rights movement. And so it's still flourishing, and not many educators really even know how to look at that, you know. My college classroom, we read a chapter on social justice, and it was just reiterated that this was a theme that our university held. But it's, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, what does that really look like? You know, is it a personal thing? Is it just an attitude I bring to the table? Is that social justice? My approach to how I look at this work, that might be it. But, you know, in higher ed, I know there's a lot of people doing real research too and looking at statistics to kind of figure out where these gaps are and where the social justice work should really come in. And to me, I'm glad I found your podcast just because, and man, there's a lot of really good ones out there too, where it's like, you know what? I need to have an open ear and an open mind because I definitely want to be the best I can be for my students and in my career. So when I retire at, you know, 60 or whatever, it's like, you know what? I definitely tried and we'll see where education is then, but at least I want to do my part. because life's too short. You have to take advantage of the opportunities to learn, you know, in your profession.
Thanks for sharing that. Umberto, tell us about the identities that are salient for you today.
One that I didn't really know was part of my identity, and you had a guest who was talking about first gen mentalities and just knowing that you were first gen, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm first gen too. And with that, you know, has come, for me, it's just been a learning experience, because the idea of even being a teacher, it's, you know, my parents weren't educators, my parents aren't college educated, you know, and that goes back, you know, hundreds of years where, you know, my parents are from Mexico. You know, we're a working class. And so navigating through college, you know, I got glimpses of that. It's like, oh, wow, like I really have nobody to refer to other than a counselor that, you know, I really don't get to see that often. And now in teaching, you know, in many ways, that's where I realized, man, I need community, because I'm going to get stuck and I need to learn how to navigate, you know, this educational bubble, you know, that I guess if I want to do the things that I want to do or find opportunities in my district, I need to learn how to navigate this. And, you know, I don't know where I heard this or read this, but I definitely feel like that's an issue with being first gen, is the idea that you don't really know how to build a network. You might not have a network, so you need to kind of figure out how to establish that. And right now I'm realizing more and more, I need to figure out a community, or I need to find a community that, you know, is like-minded, just to have, just to talk with, and to, whether it's this work or our lives in general. But it's like the idea of community is just that much more important, because being first gen, being that I'm a teacher, and I come from I came from a career where, you know, not everybody was educated. I worked at Pepsi for 7 years before I dove right into teaching. And so a lot of my friends, you know, didn't go to college, and they're working 9 to 5, they're doing good. But it's so I've had to really start from scratch, because I was the only one of my friends that really worked and went to school at the same time. So as a newer teacher, I've had to build relationships, you know, and with people who are in this together and understand what it is to teach, you know, because I'll talk to my family and friends about it and they don't understand, like, oh man, like this job is tough. It's tiring. You know, there's a lot of emotions that are charged up on a day to day, and you come home drained, and there's a lot of expectations. And so it's like, who do I talk to? My thing is doing my best to build networks in schools and start creating that. You know, or else I feel like I'll get stuck, and I'll just kind of be a teacher, but yet I won't really continue developing. And that's one of, not my fear, but that's one of my concerns, is like, how do I remain active and learning? Because I really love this work, and community is important. And being first gen, you know, really makes me realize that, you know, there's different types of communities you can be a part of, but you know, one, in this career, I need to find community and people trying to do this work. And it's not that easy to find. You have to really look out there, you know, kind of like searching for this podcast, you know, you have to really put yourself out there. You know, I had to go to UCR and, you know, step into a classroom and ask if I could just sit down during one of an ethics studies class, because I'm very new to that whole idea as well. You know, I reached out and joined, looking into joining a group called ADE, which is a group for, you know, Hispanic, Latino, Chicano, minority educators. And it's the idea of using being active. So using activism as a form of change. So rather than just listening and reading and, you know, playing the part in a classroom, it's like, how do you make real change? You have to be active. So that's new to me too. And something I've learned this summer is activism. The word activism, I'm not an activist. I've been to a couple rallies, but I wouldn't consider myself an activist. And so now looking at myself as activist and educator, and how they need to be synonymous in order to do this type of work, you know, and that's new to me too, this approach. But it's like, now how do I find fellow minded teachers in my little area here in Southern California that's pretty conservative and very small? How do I build community here? And I'm very much in the dark as well as that too, but I'm definitely pushing forward. And I think first gen has allowed me to venture off and have to be very kind of independent in my search, because it's like no other way. I think first gens carry that. It's like, we got to figure this out. You know, we have to be our own form of reference many times, unless we have somebody there. But if we don't, it's like, how do we actively find community? You know, and that's what it's almost like that immigrant mentality. It's like, you know, we're here. So now what do? We got to get to work. And what does that look like? You have to just freaking try and try again. So that's kind of what the first gen mentality has brought to me, is being just very active, moving forward, you know, being kind of staying hungry, staying motivated, And I think I've inherited that with my first gen mentality as well. And I'm proud of that. You know, it's like being first gen, because I feel that it's given me certain ways of looking at, you know, challenges.
It's really admirable. I mean, it seems like you've noticed that there's not a community maybe established already. And how do you kind of piecemeal together something that meets your needs so that you can thrive? And I think that's a great segue to our next topic, which is telling us about the work that you're doing today. What do you envision as either your next projects, or what are you working on currently that you want to share with folks that are listening in?
I'll be teaching at a high school in a city that people say has a lot of money, but has a lot of money in the sense that there's a railroad that has been established there for the last like 70 years. And so it's one of those districts, like, you know, they're very solid. People are very adamant to go and apply at this district. I was very fortunate to get hired there, but not so much for, well, I mean, yeah, the awards are always nice, you know, but it's one of those, it's an underserved community in the sense that it's actually very poor. You know, the railroad company there provides great, you know, tax incentives to the city, but the city's gang infested. The city is predominantly Hispanic, African-American. You know, the demographics of these schools are, you know, pretty high in the free and reduced lunch. So it's almost like, yeah, there's money there, but it's also not in the citizens. The money's coming from these industries that are established there, but they don't necessarily represent what the community looks like. So because of kind of where I'm at mentally and preparing myself for this upcoming school year, I'll be working at an alternative high school. So I'll be working with this segment of students who in many ways look like me. And I hope they can see that. And it's like, hey, you did, like, I'm, you know, we're all in the same. And regardless of skin tone, it's one of those, like, we're all in the struggle together. But I hope that they know that I'm here for them. And so that's kind of where I'm at now, as far as, you know, as far as my work. And I was able to go to an ethnic studies conference in LA over the summer, and it was a 3-day event, and we did a lot of work on really understanding what it means to be active and engaged in, you know, in our curriculum. And so now my biggest thing is, okay, so how do I create activism at my school? So how do I then begin to think about lessons that, you know, require kids to think outside of themselves, outside of the school, and directly into our community? And so if anything, I'm like, this is like a perfect opportunity to really start exploring some of the issues going on in this community, because, you know, from what a colleague of mine who works here has told me already, he's like, you know, there's two rival gangs of students who come to the school. You know, kids are going to curse at you. Kids are going to, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom at this school with the staff. You know, a lot of teachers don't last at this school. You know, teachers are ready to transfer out, or this is what you call a school where, you know, teachers who've already taught 30 years just kind of come and kick back for a little bit, you know, because we have the fortune of having smaller classroom sizes. So this is kind of like, okay, you know what? I put my time in. I'm at the end of my salary scale. Let me just kind of post up here at this class and write out my last 2 years, you know, despite the distractions that the kids might bring. So it's one of those situations where it's like, this is a great opportunity, but it's also going to be a school where I'm expecting a lot of challenges. You know, I kind of feel like it's going to be like me being a wannabe Jaime Escalante, standing to deliver and walking into a room full of kids throwing, you know, paper airplanes. I have to prepare myself for some of that. You know, but it's like, how do I reach these kids? Because this is what I'm here for. You know, this is what I signed up for. This is what I've put all this time in for. And it's like, if I can't do it there, or if I find myself that I want to leave, then it's like, then what work am I really doing? This is where the work is. You know, these are going to be kids going into society and they might be kids who have had no positive influence in their life, you know, because that's why they're there. So that's my little motivator. But, you know, bringing in the activist thing, it's how do I take what I've learned, where my vision of ethnic studies is in my own classroom? How do I create content and curriculum that resonates with them, but is also fair, you know, not extremely biased one way, or not leaning towards any one way? Because I think there's a lot of fear that ethnic studies can do that. But how do I create a balanced approach and be successful at it and have more good days than bad days? Because it's not easy in it. And teachers who I've told where I'm going to be working kind of cringe a little bit, like, oh, that's going to be tough. You know, don't smile till December. You know, you have to be very stern right away. It's all about having, you know, high discipline. You can't let kids walk over you. So it's already this approach of me kind of coming in on the defensive. do I really want to come in that way? And is that going to be beneficial? And I guess I'll learn, but I really don't want to, you know, because I see these as kids who need somebody. So that's the work I want to do, you know. That what is social justice if you're not, you know, really reaching out to areas in which adults don't even want to serve these kids anymore. You know, they're ready to leave. They're, you know, we're having, it's a brand new staff at this school. There's going to be 2 first year teachers and myself at third year. So I'll be the veteran there at the school. It's a very small school. So it's like, that says a lot about the dynamics of that school. You know, so now I'm walking into that. So it's almost like, I think I've been preparing myself for this moment in many ways. And the work I did over summer somehow is going to trickle in naturally because I did not think I would be working here up until Thursday when I was hired. And I'll be starting next Wednesday. So it's all very much like boom. But it's in many ways, it's like, this is kind of what you always wanted. So now you get what you prayed for.
Absolutely. No, I think that the work is set up for you. And I hear you really kind of struggling with advice that different friends and colleagues are giving you. And I think remembering back to when I was working in LA Unified School District is that kids can sense when you're not being authentic. And like you're saying, you bring up a really good point that the youth are there because for one of the reasons that people haven't invested in them, right? Like people aren't actively caring for their basic needs and their thriving. And whether that's systemic or that's individual, it's like, so how do we as individuals that have access to influencing them every day, what's our disposition so that we can simultaneously maintain those boundaries that as humans we're just constantly testing out and like kind of like touching there, like, oh, is that the boundary? Oh, okay, that's the boundary, so I'm going to stay here, or I choose to like go beyond it. But it's this constant dance, you know, of figuring out who the adult figures are in their life and like what they stand for. And I've kind of noticed that young people who have a pattern of having adults in their life that don't really invest and care for them, I feel like they can sense right away who isn't authentically there for them, you know? I'm excited for you because it does sound like this work has been what you've been leading up to and kind of like training for and researching and looking into and just really pacing yourself out to be able to do this important work where the work needs to happen is with these young people. And so I'd like you to take us back to, you mentioned that you started teaching after spending several years working for Pepsi. How did you arrive to teaching? Tell us that story.
I'll be honest with you. It's still a trip. I guess my story starts with, you know, I was a young dad, 19 and 21. I had 2 kids by the time I was 21. And so, you know, I was with my kid's mom in college, and we had a nice relationship for about 5 years, and then things didn't work out there, which was another kind of hit in my life as well. But where I'm going with this is we met in college. We met at a university, you know, out here in San Bernardino. And everything was going great. Then we had 2 kids and then we had to grow up. And she went to school. I went to work. And the goal was to transfer that. And so when you become a dad or a parent, you know, they become your priority. And so as a male, we have that sense of like, oh, well, you know, it's my job to bring food to the table. It's my job to work. So at 20, you know, any dreams I had of becoming a history teacher and or a school counselor, I was flip-flopping between those two. I put that on hold. And so then I went to work. And the biggest trigger for me was, you know, when we went through a separation, not meaning to get too personal, but it is part of my story. I'll throw it out there. It's all good. But, you know, when we broke up, I realized, wow, like, I guess the only positive really coming out of this is I guess I have to really, it's like, who am I? You know, who am I outside of being a dad in a relationship and bringing food to the table where now, you know, I have to kind of create my own family, my own home, my own identity again. And I was only like 23 at the time. So I was like, well, you know, I should start going back to school because I've always wanted to. I was the first in my family to get accepted to college, and to be enrolled at university. And so, and it was still in my heart. It's like, I need to go to school. And I think once you're in the workforce as well, you realize, wow, like life is really hard. These jobs are very difficult. You know, it's not fair game out here. And so you need to be competitive. So at the time, not knowing where I'd be teaching, I was like, well, you know what? Maybe I don't know if I'll teach, but I'm definitely gonna go back to school. And so slowly but surely, I got my GEs out of the way. And it took me 7 years to graduate with my undergrad. So it's a very long journey. But in that, it's like, you know, you're working, you're a dad, you know, you have your pressures. And at the same time, you're a young man. So you're still trying to figure that out as well. And so for me, it took me a while. But in that process, I think this very much just has led me to become who I am. But I realized you know, there were days where, and maybe I'll have this have solace, but it's like, I don't feel like going to school. I'm freaking tired. I just worked a 12-hour day. You know, I don't want to go home and rest, but having to, you know, force myself or tell myself, like, you know what, just go to class, just show up. You know, and I'd have times where I'd be falling asleep in class because I was doing the kind of job where you had to get up 5 or 6 in the morning, you know, doing, working at Pepsi, and, you know, you're out 3, 4, sometimes a little later. So it was one of those, like, you just have to keep going. You have to keep going. You know, if the dream's there, you have to keep going. And so that, I apply to teaching as well, you know, with situations in the classroom. It's like, you know, this, you have to keep going. Whatever you have in your heart, you have to keep following. It's like in my heart, I saw myself as being a teacher and being in front of a classroom, but at the time, it's like, well, how's that going to happen? I have to work. I don't even know when I'll finish school. You know, that's like impossible. And I'm like already in my mid 20s and I'm still not done with school. Like, you know, and my responsibilities aren't getting any less and less, you know? So it was one of those, like, it was a vision, but it's like, how's that ever going to happen? Like, how? Like, and nobody in my network was doing it either. Maybe most of them were okay with where we were at and the money's not bad. So let's just keep working. And I think it was a series of events, and I think it was over time, these like little minuscule little changes. The biggest one was just kind of always keeping my foot in the door as far as my university and still, and always, you know, whether it was one class a semester, two classes here, like always somehow doing something school related throughout that time. And then another thing was I wrote a mantra on my phone that would alert me every day at 1 o'clock. And it would say, you're going to be a history teacher. And I started around 2013, where I would get that alert at 1 o'clock. So I'd be at work at 1, but I'd see it. And so, you know, the type of work I did was pretty physical. We had to build all the displays and fill up all the stores. And, you know, it was definitely, it was laborious work. But at the end of the day, it's like, I ride around myself, you know what, like, but you also have this other goal and you want to be a teacher and don't stop dreaming about that. So my mantra that would go off, and honestly, up until about a month ago, it would still go off, but I switched it to something else. You know, because okay, now let's do something. Now, like, now it's the next step. But that always would keep me going, because there'd be days where, you know, you just don't want to go, or you're like, what's the point? Why am I doing this? I have no social life. I freaking have a ton of work to do. I'm tired. I'm, you know, and it's like balancing, am I spending enough time with my kids? Am I present? Am I, you know, so it was a lot of that too. But, you know, I had to just keep going. And my goal was to teach. And even more so, I realized that because I was, the people who I worked around were, you know, predominantly people of color and were, and looked like me. And I realized, wait a minute, I started seeing the different dynamics in our own company culture. Like, why is it that, you know, we're kind of less represented here in the management, but yet everybody in the merchandising below, or, you know, the front lines of our company, you know, has names like Humberto and Gerardo and Roberto. And it's like, then you go up a little bit, you know, where there's a little more Anglo sounding names, and there's not as, I don't see myself in these positions as often. And so then I started noticing these disparities within corporate America, and talking to just working with people I worked with. Well, you know, most all of us just had high school diplomas. And so we were doing this work, and and I never even talked about school. I was like, why am I even going to talk about it? It's like, for one, I didn't want to feel like I'm like, oh, I'm trying to be better, or I'm better than somebody because I'm going to school. I wouldn't even talk about it. One time, a good friend of mine, who I was becoming good friends with, found out I was going to school. He's like, dude, you're going to school? I was like, yeah, dude, I've been going to school for a while, man. You know, in and out, you know, I'm kind of trying to take a class here and there. He's like, dude, where do you go? I was like, well, I go to this university. He's like, and when he asked me this, and it really resonated with me. He's like, how? Like, how are you going there? And I'm like, what do you mean how? He's like, yeah, how? Like, how did you know how to get to university? How did you know it? How did you know how to apply to college? You know, how did you know this? I was like, well, I was fortunate to be in Avid. And if it wasn't for Avid, that was my guide, my way in, because then I knew what classes to take. And he had come from a high school that didn't have Avid. They didn't have these resources. And so I found myself working with people who were highly intelligent, you know, smart people, hardworking people, but never had any access or any direction or even any real vision that they could also go to college, or they could go to a 4-year university, you know, because I think we forget that that's a big deal, especially if your parents are barely high school educated. Like, the 4-year university is like, that's a big deal. Just to be, you know, be a little bit beyond community college, and to go to a university like that isn't easy and doesn't happen every day. You know, I think it's a real privilege that we get to have this opportunity. And so that resonated with me too. It's like, wait a minute, like, there's a lot of disparity there too. And I felt bad. I was like, man, like, how is it that I had all these opportunities and these guys are working hard, and a lot of them I can tell have already settled in their ways. They're not going to go any. They don't want to go anywhere because they don't see a way out. And so my biggest thing is, I have to find a way out of this, or else I'm going to be here and this will be my life. you know, and if that's my life, then what are my kids going to want to do in their lives? Because we very much use our parents as that kind of example of where we can go. And so it's like, no, like I have to, it's like, I have no choice. Like I have to, because I really, if anything, my kids were a huge motivator as well. It's like, this is for my kids. They have to see their dad graduate. Not that he gave up after he had kids, you know, and it was so tempting so many times, but you know, that's, but I realized, hey, for one, I didn't believe that I could do it. Even up until my first year teaching, I was still very doubtful. I still have some of these doubts. Sometimes I still see myself as, I still have that identity of just being, you know, working at Pepsi. And so transferring it into, I'm at a job now where you get a lot more respect. You know, I was in the type of job where, you know, because they saw you as just a, and it's not, I'm not even trying to shame this job. I loved my job. It was great for me, but you were treated differently than maybe say a sales rep or say a driver. We were, you know, I kind of worked in the front, you know, I was a merchandiser. We drove our own cars to different stops. So I realized, wait a minute, like here, you know, parents are coming up and calling me Mr. Reyes and the kids are showing me respect and I'm dressing a little nicer. It's like, so my whole identity shifted from coming into a grocery store and being yelled at for being 5 minutes late and having a delivery in the back room and just always kind of being that, you know, the bottom of the barrel per se, coming from that identity and just having to ignore it and just keep doing my job despite whatever, you know, inklings I'd have that of that negativity. And now being a teacher where, you know, you're looked at society looks at you differently. It's like, oh, wow. Like that's a shift too, that I'm still getting used to, which is interesting, which is why it's like, wow, like life's a trip. But it's like now I've arrived in many ways. And I have to remind myself that, you know, yeah, okay. That's my past. But I'm also here now. And so now it's time to I'm here now. Yeah, we all have our story. We all have our path. But let's keep going. You know, because if anything, I feel like I've just started. I've just like my, this whole new other chapter of my life has just begun. And, I have to take what I've learned and what I would like to give back to my students. I have to apply that real world experience.
Well, and on that note, Humberto, can you share with us kind of in this theme or this tone of sharing lessons that you can, that you have personally experienced and some guidance? Like what's a lesson that you've learned in your professional life as a teacher, and what would you tell folks that are listening in that can help them kind of impart some guidance there too?
A big thing that I've had to learn is building good habits around this work. So whether you feel like it or not, you have to have the tenacity to grade papers, to sit at your desk and answer emails, to you know, really take the time to develop good lessons. So I've had to build these new habits of coming to work with the idea of being productive, being efficient. And so that's been a big one for me. And that's something I'm still developing, you know, over the summer. It's one of those where I've been reading a lot about building good habits because I feel that that's an area that I still struggle in. As far as having the type of habits that I see in other people that I'd like to have, you know, I see teachers who've been doing this for a long time who are successful and, you know, they show up to work every day, but also they also know how to use their time wisely. You know, so my biggest thing is how do I do that? How do I make sure I come in and use my time wisely and work on my work-life balance in this career as well? You're going to have to find your own voice. So be yourself in teaching. You're going to work around people who might not have the same vision as you. So you have to always be respectful. I think that when I first came in as a teacher, I was very much gung-ho and very I came in with just wanting to try this idea and that idea and that idea. And I realized, wait a minute, I'm trying to do too much. So also keep it simple. So one approach I have now going into my third year is, you know, sticking to the guidelines, doing the job you've been asked to do. Don't step out too much outside the box just yet. If anything, get to know the culture, get administration to get to know your skill set. Don't be afraid to reach out and build a community in your school. So that's my biggest thing is how do I make relationships? Because I'm going to need somebody to vent to some days and I would like them to feel the same way with me because then we can create a stronger work culture with ourselves. So really focusing on stepping out of my comfort zone, going to visit that teacher on one day, this teacher on another day. Attitude, coming in with leaving work at home and coming in with a fresh attitude. That's been a big one for me. Just, you know, always trying to be always smiling and being as positive as I can. even on days where, you know, you feel like you have nothing else to give, you're like, oh man, you know, you have to still come at it with that right attitude. And what I'm working on that I'm excited for is just, you know, making sure that I challenge my students enough. And that is going to require me to use the resources I have and take and separate a certain time frame of my day to do the research work, to find the right lessons, but also not let it consume me. Because one thing I learned the hard way was you can also overdo it. And I came in so enthusiastic and it had been such a quote unquote journey for me to get in this, to where when I came in, I would be at school till either from 7:30 and I wouldn't leave until 6, 7 o'clock. And I did that often. And I would skip my lunch to like go to my computer and, you know, answer emails, put in some grades. So I came in with that attitude of like, I'm here now. I can't mess this up. So, but I feel that that was derived from fear. I was, if anything, afraid to lose this that I now had, because I had worked so hard to get there. Then now it's like I have it and I'm so like, I don't want to screw this up. Like, you know, and so now I've also, the biggest thing, and I worked on this all summer long through reading and just through meditating, but it's learning how to handle my stress, but also learning how to come in rather than with fear, coming in with love and with a positive attitude, and not, and coming in from if I'm feeling overwhelmed, recognizing that that's not a good place to come from, and rather take a step back and know that things will be okay. Like, things always work themselves out. Even if, you know, lesson isn't perfect, isn't like met this majestic, creative, freaking teachers pay teachers worthy lesson, being okay with, you know what? What makes this lesson interesting is the passion and the energy and the enthusiasm I bring to it, rather than like the hours I spent on it. So I think it comes going back to what I said earlier about keeping it simple. You know, keeping it simple, because if you overdo it, you'll pay for it. You know, whether it's you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, at least for myself, you know, you'll pay for it. You know, it'll catch up to you. And this type of work requires you to come in, I feel, with a fresh spirit. You know, because we're working with kids, we're working with people, and people need the best of you. So you need to make sure you give the best to yourself and take care of your own needs as much as you can. And time management and building good habits will support you in that process to be the best you for you, which will then transcend to your kids, to your family, to your, you know, then everything else. But I had to learn that, because I came from this grind mentality. I came from this mentality where it's like, I got to grind, I got to work, I got to work, I got to work, I got to work. But that's my only way. And so applying that to teaching, it's like, no, I got to work, yes, but I got to work smarter, not harder.
Tell us about a resource that, whether it's like a book, a podcast, an article, like something that has really been formative in influencing the way that you approach the work you do in, you know, as a history teacher through the social justice and revisionist lens. Like, what's that resource that you want to share with folks that are listening in that informs your work?
My biggest guide is a book by Howard Zinn called A People's History of the United States. And so this is looking at history from the angle of those who have suffered the effects of colonialism. So looking at history from the Native Americans' perspective in great detail, you know, looking at the actual brutality against them. But it's one of those books that I'm using as my guide. It's like, this is the angle that our students need to hear more. So that's why that book has been very much my guide. And he has a website called the Zen Ed Project, which has a ton of resources for world and U.S., mainly U.S. history classes that are framed around equity work, social justice work. And they have, you know, a whole team of people who are on the same team when it comes to really bringing in this approach to education. And the biggest thing too is, and I was just reading about this yesterday, because I'm looking at the textbook I'll be using, because I just found out about this job. And I was also looking at how textbooks are extremely biased as well. And they leave out, you know, chunks of our history. So once I get my whole curriculum, you know, I can use these resources to kind of plug in like, oh, wait, let's go back and look at these Chinese immigrants a little bit longer, because let's not forget that our American history is beyond grandiose way of looking at ourselves. And it's like, let's plug in some of the things we don't want to talk about. And I think high school is a good way to kind of start integrating that, because I feel like I missed out. It's like, why didn't I get more of this perspective? Because I came out feeling like things were good and things were working, when in reality, you know, things aren't working and we are better than where we are now. especially in our own political climate now, that we're better than this. And so how can we move forward unless we go back and really look at ourselves, you know, as a nation. And so these students, I think, will have an opportunity to, along with myself, really learn about this angle. And that is still very much developing, because there's a lot of scorn, especially in our country, about this approach, this ethnic studies approach, this multiculturalist approach of bringing awareness to anything other than, you know, how great our country is. And so, like Howard Zinn, he's a big one. There's also the same version, but it's called A People's History of the World by a different author, but it's also the same narrative. Stanford has a really great website called SHEG. I think it's called the Stanford History Education Group, something along those lines. But you just type in Stanford History Education Project and that will come up. But it's also kind of along this lens of looking at how can we teach our students to think this way and to be more critical in their, you know, inquiry towards history. And so that's a great resource. Stanford's doing good work in this. So using those resources. But right now I would say my Bible, is Howard Zinn at the moment, you know, and anything that kind of follows us, because he was very much a civil activist. I believe he worked along Martin Luther King, but he was very much in the front lines during the civil rights movement. And so, you know, he's somebody who I look up to and admire. And he was a history teacher, and he really changed the way that we looked at our approach to American history. And I didn't find out about him until after college.
So as we close out, Umberto, what is your preferred way that folks can add you to their network and connect with you?
If anybody would like to add me, I'm on Instagram, _HReyes_JR. You know, build community. You know, if you're in Southern California, you know, reach out to me. I'm building that community. There is a Ethnic Studies Now coalition going on in the Inland Empire, which I'm looking to really find people in this and to reach out and become part of this organization. But there is a lot out here developing. But if anybody would like to reach out and learn more about this, or have some ideas for myself or places of communities I can join, you know, I feel that, you know, it's all for good. So, you know, reach out.
And what I'll do is I'll put the link to Umberto's Instagram account in the show notes so that people can easily connect with you and add you to their network. So, Umberto, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited for people to listen in. And Umberto and I are also recording the video version of this, so look forward to that in the future. And we're going to close out today with an inspirational quote to send you all back out into the world. And today's quote comes from Henry David Thoreau. Rather than love, than money, than faith, than fame, than fairness, give me truth. To all those listening in, thank you so much for all that you do. I truly appreciate you. Stay resilient. Thanks so much for tuning in. Head on over to iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss out on a single episode.